Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk. Today we're going to talk to a best-selling author, one of my favorite thriller writers of today, and her name is Julie Fielding. And she's here to talk about The Wild Zone. How are you?
I'm just great, thank you.
It's so good to have you on the show. You know, I'm reading this book, and this is one of my favorite books of the year. It's just, you write so well. I don't know how you do it.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, what if you had to tell somebody what your secret was, what would you say? Or don't you?
You know, I wish I knew, because every time out, it's like I've never written a book before in my life. I think probably what I try and do is create real characters, like believable characters, because all action springs from character. And people, you know, the plot should always spring from who these people are and the way they react and everything. So I have to have a very good understanding of exactly who my characters are and their upbringing and their parents and their childhoods, because so much of who we become as adults is based on who we were as children. And I think that's the key. I think I know my characters well. I create believable human beings. And then I think that no matter how far-fetched the situation or where you take these, you know, you can take these characters into outer space if you want. And I think as long as you've created believable people, your readers will go with them. And that's what I try and do. Plus, then I just try and keep my story. You know, it's important to get a nice strong plot, and you just have to keep that story moving.
Yeah, well, this book, Will and Jeff, now, this is one of the crazier books that I've read recently. It actually makes me laugh to think about it, because you think your life is a little crazy, but then you read about other people, and you think, wow, are there really people like this in the world?
Well, you know, everybody has a story. I have discovered, you know, over the years that, you know, you meet somebody and you think, oh, God, how boring is this person, or that there's really not much to somebody. And then you sit down and you talk to them and you find out all these incredible things. I mean, really, the more people I meet, the more I realize that just everybody has a story. There is nobody who hasn't got either a skeleton in the closet or has had this kind of fantastic upbringing or this really weird set of circumstances happen to them. There is always something. And so I find, again, it doesn't matter if you don't know people who personally, you know, you don't know these people personally who have experienced things like that, or you don't know people like this. But if I can make them believable enough, then that doesn't really matter, because the chances are, I mean, they really say truth is stranger than fiction, and I really believe it. I think that there are so many bizarre things out there, it's almost difficult to top them in fiction, because, you know, there's no end to weirdness.
What you do so well is you flesh out the characters so well. I mean, so many books you read, everything's so fast nowadays. When you read a book and you read some of these authors, they write a book, and the book's interesting, but then by the time you finish the book, you don't remember the characters anymore. But your characters are very memorable, and you're able to somehow bring them to life so well. I mean, that's what you do so much better than so many other authors. It amazes me how good you can write. When I read your books, I often think, "Wow, I wish I could write like this." I wish I could read other people that write like this, because it's just so interesting. You can't read this book and not think to yourself, "Wow, that's really interesting stuff." And it's not only what you write; it's the way you write. It's the smoothness of your writing. I don't see it very often.
Well, thank you. I think, you know.
You must have a great editor too. Or is it just
I have a lovely editor, but I really don't give her the manuscript until it's pretty much ready. So she does, you know, some of the fine tuning. She tells me where it needs a little more, where it needs a little less, and sometimes she'll eliminate some of the analogies, and, you know, maybe I've got one too many similes in there that she thinks we can do without. But by and large, it's just. Again, I know what my story is. I like a nice, strong plot. I really believe. Somebody once said to me, you know, if you're writing a story about Goldilocks and the Three Bears, bring on the Three Bears. And I think that's a great piece of advice. You know, you asked earlier what I would advise people, and that's probably one of the keys, because get to your story. Tell your story. Get it moving along. I also have, you know, I have a very good ear for dialogue, and not all authors do. So, you know, my dialogue rings true, and I reveal a lot through the dialogue, and I know how to move the story through the dialogue, which I know a lot of authors don't. Sometimes you get people sitting around in a restaurant in a book, you know, and they're talking about nothing for pages and pages and pages, and it's not advancing the plot, and it's not really telling you much about the people. It's just sort of endless dialogue that goes nowhere. And so I think, you know, there's nothing in my books that is extraneous. Everything that is there for a reason.
Right.
And so everything contributes, everything tells you something that you need to know.
And the interesting thing is, I have a friend who reads you also, and every time your book comes out, she asks me, "What is there a new one out yet?" And she just loves to read them as soon as they come out. And it's when I recommend you to other people, they always seem to love your books. And the book starts out with, it says, this is how it starts, with a joke. Are you a good joke teller?
I'm not. I used to be, I think, sort of half decent at telling jokes, and now I can't remember any of them. So people tell me jokes, and even the good ones, they're just like in one ear and out the next. And the only ones I kind of remember are kind of the classics, like the joke I open with in the book, in The Wild Zone. I'm not anymore. I forget the punchline, or I forget the middle, or I forget what makes it funny. It's but this joke I've always liked. I just thought it was a clever joke, and I wanted to tell us, you know, I thought it would be appropriate to open up, since we are having, you know, a few guys, you know, a few men in a bar. I thought it would be funny to tell a joke about, you know, a man walks into a bar, and I thought of this one, and I always thought it was very cute without being dirty and without being, you know, setting the wrong tone. But in fact, the joke kind of sets up the whole book, because in many ways that's what the book is about: misguided machismo and you know, the consequences of basically getting what you want. You know, be careful what you wish for. But it's all in that joke, really, some of the main themes of the book. And yet it's funny. I hope it's funny, and it just sort of gets the story going.
And of course, there are three men in this: Will, Jeff, and Tom, and they're all very different characters. And you're not afraid to write characters that we can really hate.
Well, you know, Tom, I think Will and Jeff are more complicated. Tom is relatively simple in the sense that...
Is anybody really simple, though?
No, absolutely not. No, nobody is what they quite what they seem.
But you don't write simple characters.
But Tom is really governed by his anger.
Right.
And he's not complicated in the sense that he's like Jeff. Jeff is a much more complex individual. He has more layers. Tom's layers kind of got buried a long time ago. So Tom is essentially just a very angry man. He's always been angry, and he basically, the war just kind of finished him, and the war in Iraq, more or in Afghanistan rather, just kind of finished him in terms of his personal growth. And so you have this very angry young man, and then you have the two brothers, half brothers really. And Jeff, I really kind of liked. I always had a soft spot for Jeff because he's kind of a lost soul. He is the type of man who sort of buys into the image of what he's supposed to be, but in fact, there's stuff under the surface that Jeff has a chance. But, you know, but he has a chance, but he doesn't, you know, he's just kind of a lost soul, and because of his upbringing, because of what's happened to him, and then there's his brother, who also, you know, who seems like sort of the good guy, and in many ways he is the good guy, but he still has a few traits in there that are maybe not quite so admirable, so... You have these three men who get together, who, you know, again, are all you know, kind of showing off for one another, who are jealous of one another and distrustful in many ways, and yet wanting all of them very much wanting to belong. And then you have, you know, and then these two women who you know, the girlfriend, Jeff's girlfriend, who's a bartender, and the relationship that she has with both Jeff and his brother. And then you have, of course, the woman who sets off this whole chain of events, Susie, the woman in the bar, and you get these three men making a bet on who can be the first one to seduce her. And of course, Kristen, the bartender, Jeff's girlfriend, who is quite complicit in going along with this whole bet. So it makes for a very, you know, once this situation gets set in motion, again, it's like the unintended consequences of a seemingly, you know, not, I won't say innocent act, but certainly you don't foresee deadly consequences. But everybody has their own agenda, so nothing quite works out the way one thinks it's going to.
And I think in a lot of aspects, reading this book, it's almost, for some of these characters, it's almost like watching a train wreck happen. Because they're some of them are just falling apart, and you wonder, you know, what, why did they get this way? Why are they this way? And could I be this way if not for... what, I mean, if my life had taken a different turn? I mean, life is full of things that happen, and as a result, it can change our whole life.
Oh, absolutely. Your life can, you know, can change on a dime, and you know, everything. And I think that, you know, the older you get, the more you realize how little control we have over almost everything. And so you try and be as good a person as you can and be kind, but really a split second can change your entire life.
Or a bit of anger can change your life. You can do things in anger.
Or somebody else's anger. You know, like, you really, nothing is certain, and nobody is exactly the way they seem to be, and nothing is as cut and dried as sometimes we think it is. And again, be careful what you wish for,
right?
Because it doesn't always work out quite the same, you know, the way you think it's going to.
You have an amazing ability to tell a good story, though. I mean, that to me is crucial for any writer out there.
Yes, I think you're right. I think that's what is missing in a lot of novels, certainly, you know, the more literary novels, and a lot of authors who get tremendous praise, but they don't know how to tell a story. I'll read the book and I'll think, oh, God, you know, where's the structure here? Where is the story? Yes, these characters are interesting, and yes, this is well written, and boy, what a great turn of phrase, but where's the story? So I've always tried very hard to tell a story, and my main... what I really want to do, my main goal, is really to entertain the reader. Yes, I'd like to educate. Yes, I'd like to make a few points and get you to look at certain things in a different way. But if I'm not doing that in an entertaining fashion, then I'm not succeeding. It's very important to me that you, first and foremost, and that I tell a good story, and that you, as a reader, come away thinking, oh, God, that was really good. I couldn't put that down.
Right.
Whether or not you pick up on all the other little things that I kind of pepper the book with, well, that's fine. If you get them, fine. If you don't, that's also fine. I just want you to really, really enjoy the experience of having read one of my books.
Yes,
go ahead.
I was going to say, do you have as much fun writing these as we do reading them?
Some of them I do. Some of them are a little harder, you know.
What makes them harder?
Sometimes I, you know, I'm like everybody else. I get a little lazy. So sometimes I don't really do enough homework on the character, and I'll start a book, and I'll be writing this character, and I'll think, why isn't it working? Why isn't she working? Or why isn't he working? What's wrong with this character? And I realize, well, of course it's not working, because this character was 30 years old when they were born. You know, I haven't created the necessary history for them, even in my own mind, even if I don't put any of it on the page. If I don't know who this character is, you will not know who this character is. So I have to really, and sometimes, you know, again, this involves a lot of work, so sometimes I'm like, you know, I'll just take a shortcut and I'll create this character and I'll kind of think I know them, but then I realize, I don't, and I have to kind of go back and I have to really fully realize who this character is. Now, not all books are, sometimes you get a, in your head, you get a really good sense of the story, like the story will almost kind of come to you in one, you know, quick whack. And other times you'll get the germ of an idea and you're really not 100% sure where you're going with it. So you have to kind of think and let it percolate for a while. And I don't like to start a book not knowing how it's going to end, because I'm one of those writers who believes that that in order to write good suspense, really, I have to know where I'm going, because there's no other way for me to build suspense if I don't know where I'm going. The book's just going to wander all over the place. So I really need to know the beginning and the end and a couple of points along the way.
Do you leave clues along the way?
Right. Sorry?
Do you leave clues along the way?
Oh, I always leave clues.
Yes.
There should be, I mean, if you read, for example, The Wild Zone, everything is more or less, the clues are all there. They're all there in that first chapter. They're all, everything, you know, with my books, you know, some people say, I did it. Well, I really don't care who did it. That's not the main thing. And again, what I want is, you should be surprised by the outcome, possibly, but you shouldn't be that, or you might be shocked, but you shouldn't be all that surprised, you know, because really, if you go back and you read the book again, you will see that all the clues are there. I am very, very careful that I don't mislead the reader, that when you want to, if you want to go back and check anything, really, it's all the groundwork has been laid. Everything is there if you're looking for it. Now, I prefer not, like when I read a book, I just like to read a book. If I happen to figure things out, or, you know, it's the same in a movie, if I happen to sort of figure out the mystery or the whatever along the way, well, that's fine, but I never consciously sit down and try and figure it out, because I enjoy the ride. I just want to go along and hopefully find a good piece of writing that captivates my imagination and isn't, you know, again, if it is a kind of a mystery, then it isn't too obvious. But you have to play fair. You have to play fair with the reader, so that, again, when you go back, you may be sort of shocked momentarily, but then if you realize, oh no, all the clues were there. It was all there.
You're one of the, and I don't know how many there are, but I don't have I read a lot of different writers, but you're one of the writers that I never want to stop reading. I never want to, every book that comes out, I get excited and want to read it. And the reason is because I know I'm going to get a good story. I know I have a good writer in my hands that knows what they're doing. And he's going to...
And I think one of the other things, I thank you for that, these compliments are...
Oh, I really mean that, believe me. I wouldn't say that if I didn't mean it.
I think that one of the nice, or at least maybe where I'm a little different from a lot of writers out there, is I really do make a conscious effort to write a different kind of story each time out, so that you don't feel like you're sort of reading the same book all the time. They're all really quite different from one another.
And you don't write series, so you've never written a series.
No, I haven't written a series yet. Every so often I'm tempted, just because I think it might be in some ways easier to, you know, to have a set cast of characters and then just have them involved in a different adventure every time. But then that has its own complications, you know, because you have to keep it fresh. You have to keep the story really interesting. There isn't the room, you know, to develop, you know, for character development in the same way. Plus, you have to kind of make sure that readers who do follow a story, you know, are aware of everything that's happened before. And then you have other questions. Well, do you age the character? Or do you have, you know, all of these, you know, sorts of things that you have to consider. People seem very fond of series. Maybe one day I'll write a trilogy or something like that. I can't, you know, but you have to get a cast of characters and a situation that kind of lends itself, I think.
Do you have an idea for a trilogy?
You got a gimmick, you know, like
right.
A is for alphabet or whatever, you know,
right.
The Sue Grafton books, where you have an interesting gimmick, and then you just sort of, you write your 26 books, and you know, you hope that your readers you know, keep reading.
Now, do you have an idea for a trilogy in your mind right now?
I don't at the moment, no. So far, I have always preferred to write a whole new cast of characters and a whole new plot every time out. And I have lots of ideas. And I, you know, every so often I think, oh, I could take that. Like one of my books, Charlie's Web, for example. That I think that's a natural series in there if, in fact, I wanted to do that. Because Charlie Web is, you know, she has the kind of job, she has the kind of family, she has the kind of situation where, in fact, I could write multiple books with that character and that situation. There's that. There are some other books that I've written, Whispers and Lies, Heartstopper, where, in fact, they, you know, I could easily do a sequel. But so far, I have enough fresh ideas. The hard part, like people always ask, you know, where do you get your ideas? And getting the idea is not the hard part. The hard part is what to do with the idea. So I have lots of ideas right now that are all new and fresh. And if I can think of stories that, you know, if I can think of what to do with these various ideas, then I think I would probably just like to develop all those before I actually double back and reuse some of the characters.
That's an interesting thing you brought up, the fact that if you have an idea, you have to be... I mean, all ideas are not going to make good books.
No, they're not, and some ideas need a lot of time to cook in your head. You know, one of my books, Whispers and Lies, I had that idea, oh God, about 30 years before I actually sat down and wrote the book. I had the basic idea for that story, you know, about basically, you know, two women who, like one woman who rents a room. Well, initially it was going to be two young women who rent a room one rents a room in her apartment to another, and then along came single white female. So I kind of scuttled that idea, but I always thought it would be interesting to, you know, to have that idea of, you know, again, people not being what they seem. And
which dates all the way back to Agatha Christie. I mean, she was all, was a big thing with her. People not being what they seem. And that works so well in mysteries, if you do it right. Now, I mean, you have to do it right. That's how
you know, anything you have to, you know, if you want it to work and you want it to work well, then you...
you have to fool the reader.
Right.
And you know, how hard is it to fool a reader sometimes? I know people that can open a book and they'll say, oh, by page 35, I do the answer already.
Yes.
And I'm like, what? Heck, that has to be possible.
Well, I had a very... I mean, I watched the other... I was on a plane the other... last week, I guess, and I watched... I put on Shutter Island on the plane. And I hadn't read the book. And I understand the book is fairly interesting. The movie was quite dreadful, at least what I saw. It started... I saw maybe the first 5 minutes and I fell sound asleep. I woke up probably a little past the halfway mark. I heard one line of dialogue where they said, we've counted and there all 26 patients are accounted for, and the hero says, well, but I thought there were 27 patients. And the minute he said that, I had the entire movie figured out. I knew exactly, and that was the only line of dialogue I heard in the whole movie. So I then promptly fell right back to sleep till the end, and then saw the end, and of course I was right. But so that was really from 5 minutes of viewing and one line of dialogue, and I have the entire picture figured out, and I wasn't trying.
Right.
It was just, you know, it was like, well, how could, you know, you might as well have hit me over the head with it. So, you know, I think, I'm hoping the book was better than that.
I was just talking to somebody about this whole thing about movies and books, and in my eyes, the book is always better than the movie. I don't ever think, I can't even think of a book that was, well, other than maybe Jurassic Park. I think Jurassic Park was just as effective as the book. But even the book in that sense is much better written, much more complex. And books are always much more complex.
Well, yes, they have time. You know, if you were, in fact, to film most books, like, as they're written, you would have a 26-hour movie. The fact is, you know, a movie has to condense and really just tell the essence of the plot and capture the character in, you know, in a shrug, in a look, and, you know, it's again, a movie is moving pictures, so you have, it's a completely different form. A book is narrative, and a movie is visual. So you have to be able to tell that story in a movie in a completely different fashion. And because movies are visual and books are narrative, when we're reading a book, we all have sort of our own idea of who these characters look like and who they, you know, what they are. And what. So that when you see a movie and the character, you know, is nothing like the person you saw in your head, then it's always a bit jarring. It's like, and I think it, because so much of what we bring to a novel is whatever our level of experience allows us to bring, and who we are allows us to bring. You know, it's a richer experience in that way. You know, there's much more. It's a less passive, I think, form than watching a movie. You know, it requires more thought. And
yeah, what got me reading you was CJ and Run. To me, CJ and Run is one of the best mysteries I've ever read. I mean, it's just a fantastic book, and I've been reading ever since. I mean, it's such a fantastic book, and to even describe it would probably give something away, but whoever out there hasn't read it, you should really go and get it. It's one of those books that, it's a perfect mystery to me. I mean, I think it's as good as anything Agatha Christie ever wrote.
Thank you.
And I don't say that lightly.
That's one of my favorites.
Yeah, I love that book. I've always loved that book. Now, have you been a best-selling author since that book? Or when did you start selling?
Yeah, actually, I think probably my first big break was with Kiss Mummy Goodbye, which was a few books. Kiss Mummy Goodbye was my fourth book, and I believe
yes, you're right.
Nancy Dane Run was my ninth or something like that.
It is nine, you're correct.
I think Kiss Mummy Goodbye and then The Other Woman, they both made the New York Times bestseller list. And then there was The Deep End, which I think is really a really good little book, which you know, didn't get as much press, but it's always been one of my favorites. And then a number of others, and then see, I kind of hit the mother load, I guess, with C. Jane Run, and that brought me, I think, to a different level, and to, you know, certainly that's the book, I think, that when most people sort of think of me, that's the one that started most people.
Do you ever get really unable, in the middle of a book, do you ever get to the point where you can't write, or something happens and you just don't know where to go, and does that happen to you?
Oh, I think it happens to everybody a little bit. That's why I think it really helps to have a good, strong outline. Because, you know, if you've thought about that, you know, if you kind of do all that work and let all that angst go and everything before you actually start writing the book, then writing the book isn't as difficult. Writing the outline is often the hardest part, because then you really have to focus on what you're doing and really essentially tell a story in, like, say, 10 pages. You have to know what your plot is. You have to know who your characters are. And, well, you may not know exactly what's going to happen in the book, and one of the great joys of writing is the surprises along the way. You don't want to know everything. But I think when I have an outline, it really helps me focus so that I don't, in fact, I mean, you might get a day where you just don't feel like it, or the chapter's not working, or you can't quite figure out what to do. So I find actually what I do then now is I don't panic the way I used to. I just basically, I'll put it down, I'll go do other things, I'll get into bed that night, and before I go to bed, I say to myself, okay, while you're asleep, you're going to sort through this problem, and by the time you wake up in the morning, this problem's all going to be solved, and you're going to know what to do. And sure enough, by the next morning, I do.
It's amazing how much sleep will do for you.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think just giving your mind the message that, you know, it's going to work out, and just sort of let your subconscious work on it a bit, and generally speaking, it will work out. Now, if it means that there's going to be a few days, so then give yourself a bit of a break, you know, and just do something else for a couple of days. You can't do it for too many days, you know. You have to be disciplined enough. You know, people say to you, you know, do you wait for inspiration? Well, no. If you're going to wait for inspiration, you're going to write one book. You know, really, it's something that you have to do, and you do it every day, and you sit down, and you write. That's the only way to be a writer, is to actually sit down for a minimum of 4 hours every day and write.
Right. And it's not as easy as...
Sometimes what you write is going to be garbage. But eventually, you'll just keep writing and writing and writing, and the problem will work itself out.
person.
I had to do an article once, and I had no idea what to write about. They just said, you know, write about whatever you want. I didn't know what to write about. My deadline was coming. You know, it was a newspaper article. Didn't know what to do. So I just sat down, and I started writing about my father. And I went on and on. Now, the final product, my father wasn't even mentioned. Because as I was sort of got into this story, eventually I started developing a kernel of an idea, and then the idea ended up being about truth and fiction, and really my father was nowhere to be seen. But if I hadn't spent, you know, a few hours writing about my father, I wouldn't have ultimately come to the kernel of what I wanted to say.
Is writing all that you thought it would be, or is there ever a moment where you want to do something else?
Well, there are many moments, actually. I mean, there are many moments because you think, oh, God, it's got to be easier. And not so much anymore because now, you know, I'm more confident and I'm much more successful. And but there are times, there's no question, where you think, God, there's got to be an easier way, and where there isn't quite so much pressure, and it's not, you know, I'm not alone in the room all day by myself, and and it's not just all coming out of my head. And I thought, you know, if I went and I worked in a bank, well, that would be easy. Then I just work from whatever 9 to 4, and basically when I leave work, my job's over. I don't have to be thinking about it 24 hours a day, and I wouldn't have this kind of pressure. So I think the pressure's with writing because it is such a discipline, and because you are alone and there's very limited feedback for most of the time that you're working.
Right.
There are times you think, gee, it would be nice to have just kind of a job that doesn't have so much pressure, and, you know, you get to be with other people and all that sort of stuff. But at the same time, there's nothing like writing because, first of all, it doesn't really feel like a job. I love it. I feel like I'm playing with my dolls all day. So it's just sort of, I'm there, I'm creating, my timetable is my own, I can come and go as I please. If I want to travel, I can go. You know, when my children were young and I was raising my kids, it was like, oh, I get to be a stay-at-home mom and I am work. You know, I don't have to make the agonizing choices that my friends all have to make. So,
oh, that must be nice.
it's been, you know, so I don't think there's, you know, if you have the discipline and you have, a supportive spouse, you know, so that you don't have to worry about money, because, you know, that's a huge worry. If you're writing for a living, and most writers do not make any kind of decent living writing, then if you don't have somebody paying the bills until you are successful, it's just one more pressure. And I don't know, there are people out there who write and have a full-time job, and I am full of admiration for them. I don't know how they do it. To me, writing is a full-time job, so to have two full-time jobs is quite remarkable.
It is, but you do it so well. That's why you've been so successful, because you're so good at what you do, and people know that when people pick up books nowadays, they want to be entertained. They want a good story, and they know they're going to get it from you. And I really believe that makes a big difference. And now, of course, not all great writers sell a ton of books, but
no, that's true. And there's a lot of luck involved,
right. Really.
And so, I mean, it always helps to be lucky.
You consider yourself lucky?
Always.
In that way?
Or in general? To dismiss the role of luck in any kind of success, I think is a little cavalier.
Don't you think you have a God-given talent, too?
Oh, I do. I do. I think you, again, you know, when people say, well, how do you become a writer? I think it's, you can teach certain things. You can teach structure. You can teach form. You can't teach talent. You either have talent or you don't. And you either have talent for writing or you don't. But there are a lot of writers out there who are very, very successful who I don't think are very good writers, you know, and then there are a lot of, so again, you're either fulfilling a need, or certainly a lot of other people like them, so that's fine. You know, reading is very subjective, but I think, you know, it really, It's yes, you have talent. You need to have the talent, and then you need to have the discipline, and then you need to have the luck.
Well, sometimes you just have very interesting characters. Now, take the Twilight series, for instance. I mean, Edward and Bella are interesting, and people want to know what's going to happen to them. And the love story is something that transcends everything. I mean, everybody wants a good
Absolutely.
Love story.
Absolutely. And I'm not, you know, I haven't read any of the Twilight books. I'm not. Vampires have never interested me.
Oh, really?
And I love horror movies. I love them. And I will watch them whenever I can. You know, I love sort of being, you know, scared but knowing that I'm safe. I don't like being scared in real life, but I like it on either in the movies or in books. And But vampires, even like with horror movies, you know, no matter what the horror movie, I like something that's more grounded in reality. So vampires, to me, there's never been anything particularly interesting or sexy or anything about sucking blood. That just has no appeal for me.
Well, you would like The Passage, that book that's all the rage right now, The Passage, because it's about vampires, but there's no blood in it.
Uh-huh.
There's no blood, so I think.
Well, that's an interesting thesis, then.
Yeah, it's a definitely different take on the end of the world kind of stuff with vampires. Uh-huh. They weren't even called vampires; they're called virals, and they're just it's just a very interesting story. It's just
oh,
with
good.
A good writer in it. That's the first of a trilogy, so you might enjoy that. That's really one of those books you just sit and enjoy because it's.
Oh, that's good. Then I'll definitely give it a try.
Yeah, it's definitely. Can you tell us at all about your next book? I'm so curious about what your next book's going to be about. Can you tell us anything about it?
Yeah, I can tell you a little bit. It's called. There was a name. I changed the title. I originally had it called Preferred Lies, which really didn't do it for anybody, and I wasn't keen on it that much either. But it is now called Now You See Her.
Ooh.
And which I think is much more intriguing.
Definitely.
And it's about a woman who goes to Ireland on what was supposed to have been her second honeymoon. But her actually 25th wedding anniversary, but her husband has just left her for another woman. So she goes on this second honeymoon alone. And she sees the daughter that she believed drowned in a boating accident several years earlier.
Oh, wow. Now that sounds interesting.
Now, I think it is.
How long did it take you to come up with that idea? I mean, is that just an idea that came to you out of the blue, or did it formulate over a period of time?
Well, the basic idea of seeing somebody that you believe to be dead, I think I've had that in my head for a long time. But it wasn't until, you know, I started the book about a year ago. So it wasn't until about 6 months before that I guess it just kind of, the whole idea kind of fit together with this woman going to Ireland and seeing the daughter. I always thought about it more than somebody who would see the mother, and then I thought, no, maybe we'll do it the other way around. And once I did that, the book just kind of fell into place.
And you know what? The interesting thing is when you describe it, I can see it all in my head. I can see the beginning of it. I can see her going overseas and being in the country and suddenly seeing somebody and recognizing that person. That's such an intriguing idea.
I think it works, and I think it works on, again, a number of levels. I think it has a very dark, kind of serious content, but it's told in a very entertaining fashion.
Well, once again, you know the ending before you even start to write it.
Yes, I had to know, I didn't know exactly how it was all going to come about, but I knew the main ingredients, no question.
You're one of those authors that when I sit and I read your books, right in the middle of the book, I'll think to myself, boy, this woman really knows what she's doing. I really like the style. I really like the smoothness and the style and everything about it. And there are so many authors I don't feel that way about. And although they might have an intriguing book here now and then, you do it time and time and time again. It's just amazing to me. I don't know how you make it look so easy. And I'm sure it isn't easy.
Well,
but
I think that's been sort of, I think that's a blessing and a curse, because I think that, I think if I weren't quite so entertaining, I might be taken more seriously. I think I do make it look awfully easy, and so people don't realize the amount of thought and work that, in fact, has gone into each book.
Stress. I mean, do you stress out about your books?
No. Not really stress. I enjoy it too much. I mean, there's a certain amount of stress, yes, and really most of the stress is before the book, before I've got the whole outline, but while I'm still trying to decide what exactly I want to do. Once I actually get that idea and it starts falling into place, then the stress is minimal.
And do you think about them while you're... I assume you have a lot of hobbies on the side. I mean, I'm sure you probably work out and have other... I mean, do you think about the books while you're doing that? What do you do when you're not writing? I mean, what kind of things...
Oh, yeah. Well, you're right. I do work out. You know, I have a trainer twice a week, and I'm on the treadmill most days, and I golf, and I play bridge, and I read, and I do puzzles, you know, the Sudoku or whatever it's called. And all sorts of, you know, all the cryptograms and all those kind of crosswords and things like that. So, yes, and actually I find one of the best times for thinking is like either when I'm out walking or running or I'm on the treadmill, something like that. That once you're just kind of relaxing and your mind is free, that's when some of my best ideas come or when they form. But you're always thinking about it, and it's like there's always, you know, I'm never not thinking about the books. I mean, there's always, even, you know, if I'm watching TV, I'm always getting a little bit from here and there, even if it's on a subconscious level. When we're out with other couples, my ear is always primed for something interesting that, you know, something somebody says or, you know, just, or something I see or I overhear.
And you can read the newspaper and get all kinds of ideas. There's all kinds of weird stuff in this world. Weird stuff in this world. I mean, it's the girl that sailed around the world, she's like really young and she's trying to sail around the world. I mean, it's like, there's so many, I mean, and something could happen to her. You know, there's so many ideas that you could come up with.
Yes. Oh, no, there's absolutely, there's tons of them. And, you know, you just don't want to trivialize somebody, you know, somebody's pain or like, there are certain subjects that are just too foreign for me or too massive, you know, that I just wouldn't tackle because I don't feel that I would, you know, do them justice.
Yeah, you don't write a story just to sell books either. I mean, to me, that's just a stupid thing to do.
I don't think it works either. Very few people become writers to make money because the truth is you're not good. Most people aren't going to make any money out of it. So you don't become a writer to make money, and you don't become a writer because you think you're going to sell lots of books. The fact of the matter is that 99% of all writers sell fewer than 5,000 books. So you're not, you know, it's not going to happen. So, and I also believe that you can't talk down to your material. So if you think, for example, oh, vampire books are easy, I'm going to write a vampire book. Well, no, you're not. It's not going to work. You have to love vampires. You have to love that kind of story. You cannot feel that you are sitting up on, you know, like this highfalutin, you know, literary author who's going to dabble in, you know, a romance novel or something. It's not going to work because nobody's going to believe you.
Now, where...
You don't believe it.
Right. How many countries are you published in? Do you know?
I don't exactly. I believe I'm published pretty much all over the world at this point. I think in about 25 different languages. And
do you think your readership more than women or men? Or
I would guess that most of my readers, that the majority of my readers are women.
Right.
And I think that stems from a general disinterest on the part of men to read books that are written by women because they don't think there will be anything in there that they can relate to. And I think they miss out a lot. Women do not have that. Women have no problem buying books by men authors, but I know a lot of men just will not pick up a book that's written by a woman. I don't think the majority of men are that interested in what women have to say.
I think there's a ton of talented women writers. I can't imagine not having any.
Absolutely, there are.
And
I agree with you. I think that women, you know, really... know how to write characters, and I think there are, right now there are some wonderful, there are some very good, you know, women out there writing thrillers and mysteries. I mean, there's certainly enough of them.
Absolutely.
So I think, you know, but I just think that a lot of men don't give them a chance.
It's interesting, though, you still have people coming into the bookstore, and I work at a bookstore, so they come into the bookstore and they don't know what to read. And it's like, how could you not have something to read? There's always something. I mean, to me, I can always find a book. Now, whether it's going to entertain me for the next week or so, or however long it takes me to read it, I don't know. But unless I know the author, know that they tell a good story every time, I'm not going to know for sure. But I love to take chances on a new author.
Oh, yes. I think that's great. But a lot of people, you know, are a little leery. Of course, you know, and if you're talking about spending $30 or whatever for a book, then people are a little leery to do that with an author that they don't know.
Right.
But, you know, but it's still the best buy around.
And
what else can you get for $30?
Yeah, and your books are perfect to take, like, on a plane. If you're going for a plane ride, they're perfect. I mean,
sure.
The story is just so much for that. I mean, I can imagine you sell a lot in the airports because your books
are just... Yes, apparently I do, which is great. I love it when I go on a plane and I see people carrying my books. That's always a thrill.
So what exactly... Is there anything you haven't done that you'd like to do?
Oh, I'm sure there's lots. I would just like to...
Well, you obviously don't want to retire. You enjoy what you're doing. Why would you retire?
No, I have no interest in retiring at the moment. I'm quite... I love what I'm doing. You're right. I would just... You know, I would like to keep on doing it. I would like to get better with each book. I would like to... you know, I probably, you know, I'd love to write a book that would just, you know, knock everybody's socks off. And, you know, and every so often you get one of those ideas, you know, it's the perfect confluence of the idea and the writer and the time and everything else. And you just write that book that you just go, yes, I did it.
Right.
And, you know, so that's what I'd like.
And that's what we'd like. I think it's a wonderful idea. But, you know, and you wonder, what book is that? I mean, every one of your books is memorable in my mind. I mean, I could just remember how much I enjoyed reading them. I mean, to remember a book 20 years, I don't know how many years it's been since I read T.J. Rudd, how much I enjoyed it, and I recommend it to a lot of different people. I mean, it's just so one of those books that you never forget. And that's the true sign of a good author, when you can remember their book 20 years later.
That's wonderful. I know when people say to me, I've never read one of your books, which one should I start with? I always say, start with C.J. Rudd, because then I've got you.
Exactly.
Then you're mine.
Exactly. Well, you're just a wonderful lady. This has been so much fun.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed it.
The book, again, is called The Wild Zone. It's out from Atria Books by Joy Fielding. It's in all your bookstores now. And I can't wait for next year's book. I can hardly wait now.
Thank you.
This has been David's Book Talk, and we will talk to you next time.